It's the 97th reel of Sewell Movies, where the boys dig into the amber to revive DNA of Mr. Spielberg's 1993 classic Jurassic Park. In theaters, they go all eco-friendly and check out the newest adaptation of Dr. Seuss's story, The Lorax. In trailer land, they head into space to see if it's possible to save the president's daughter from the nasty criminals who are orbiting the Earth in lockout. All this and news about Ninja Turtles, Prometheus, and the stupid kids, younger generation, who are lobbying theaters to allow texting during movies. Really? Why don't we just allow them to start fires and have sex while they're at it? But I digress. All this and who knows what else in reel number 97. Roar!
The past.
You tell me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my omnivorous co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Good. I'm so happy Steve is back. Yay.
Woo!
Missed you, Steve.
I loved how your inflection did not go up or down, and you just said, I love how Steve is back. That's exactly how I feel.
I just love how Steve is back and moving on.
Exciting. I'm all stuffy tonight. Thank you, Pollen. I hate you.
Although you should have heard it when he finally got connected to the call. Both Ray and I were like, Steven!
Yes.
Yay! I am back.
With that, let's move into the news.
News on the mark!
I have this flashback to Cubs Out Loud right now. What the fuck?
I know. Well, yeah. I did it in honor of the next generation there. So,
Survey shows that young moviegoers want movie theaters to allow texting. Seriously, really? What is wrong with you people?
Well, I don't know that anybody's like lobbying for it, but I guess some company did surveys and found out that, you know, big surprise, people like to use Facebook. But they also uncovered that over half of people ages 18 to 34 think that like using Facebook or whatever while you're in a movie theater enhances the experience. And they would patronize a theater that allowed them to do it. Well, they already patronize theaters that don't want them to do it. So,
oh my God, I would just smack the shit out of somebody. I really would. I'd have to go. I would literally have to have like a cone of silence around me so I did not throttle someone who was sitting there just texting throughout the movie. Because the other problem is people don't know how to keep it in their lap. They have to have it up at their goddamn face. You know what I mean? And just like.
Well, they need to be able to read the everything. I would love to hear the commentary from Tim something or other. Can't remember his name off the top of the head. The owner of the Alamo Draft House. Mm-hmm. Where they are very, very serious about no texting, tweeting, talking, telephoning at all during a movie. During a movie at an Alamo, they will kick you out, and it's a very serious threat. So nobody does it because they know they'll do it.
I think part of the problem is that in most movie theaters around the country, it's not a serious threat. You know, it's not really. It's up to everyone to sort of self-police everyone else and say, be like, hey, you know, you're driving me nuts with that. Could you please chill out? Now, there's been a couple things. You're going through the comments here. Some people have said, well, maybe they could dedicate certain showings of the day to be allowed. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to cross that line. I don't want to be like, once you start allowing it, then it's just going to be like a no holds barred. Unless they totally go like the Alamo Draft House and be like, all right, we're going to let you do it at this time, but any other time, we're going to kick your ass out.
Well, the Alamo Drafthouse does do that with a specific event, but it's not texting, it's tweeting. Because they have these showings of, like, bad movies, where basically they have, while the movie is playing on the screen, they're showing your teats, tweets. So you, like, put a hashtag.
Showing your teats? Sorry.
And you put in a certain hashtag, and then they've got that search going, and just people's snarky remarks appear on the screen. And it was meant to. And when they say texting would allow a much, or checking Facebook would allow much better social experience. Well, yeah, in this case, yes, because the idea is to make fun of the movie. It's MST3K by allowing people to show their tweets. They're intending to do that. But it's also part of the movie. You know,
right.
So it's there on screen.
If it's an immersive part of the movie, makes sense. Or if there's some kind of special, you know, like when you see this on the screen, look at your phone and see what comes up. That would make sense. But for just the generally, for the fact that I just want to be able to text and put Facebook statuses up while I'm at the theater, screw you. You can wait 2 hours.
Don't MST3K with your friends on Facebook. MST3K with the people who are in the theater with you and enjoying it with you. That is understandable. But when you're just sending out to nobody and you see somebody's screen pop up, but then you have absolutely no idea what they say, and you're not going to go over there and say, oh, what did you send? Or, hey, what's your Twitter handle? Or something like that. You're not going to do that, no. And they may have actually texted it to a specific group of people. And it's like, oh, can you text that to me too? Just so we can get the notes? No, we're not going to do that. You're not going to have that social.
The next thing is like, excuse me, teacher, but I need to text in Facebook during class, please. Because, you know, I have to do it. You know, it would make it a more immersive experience for me.
It's not an additional immersive experience unless you're doing it with people with who you're with at the time. So the people who are there. Because then everybody can enjoy the fun of the snarky remarks that you're tweeting. So, like, you could be watching The Lorax and people are tweeting, and we've seen it on the screen, and seen what snarky remarks. Although this one movie is probably doesn't necessarily deserve those type of things, but that was the first movie that came to mind.
Yeah, you know, I would love to see somebody come up with some way to, and I think they have some sort of technology like this in some places, but you know, the phones today are, you know, they're like mini computers. They can figure a lot of shit out. I would love for the movie theaters to be able to sort of broadcast a signal maybe that does not allow the phones to do certain things, like automatically.
There's some places that have talked about that. Yeah, there's been places that have thought the nanotechnology in the walls and stuff, the blocking signals.
Well, I'm not even talking about like blocking, but you could just actually broadcast a signal that says, hey, especially for people that, you know, we have all these, you know, GPS enabled phones, it'd be like, hey, when you're at this location, you know, walking into this building that your phone's not going to work. So, you know, deal with it. And it could, you know, lock out the phone, keep it from the screen turning on or whatnot, just keeping it totally silent. I know they've done or thought about doing similar things in like places where they don't want people taking pictures, like having the phones unable to actually activate their cameras, things of that nature. And that could all go along with that. I think if everybody knew going into a theater that, hey, you walk into the theater, your phone's not going to work. You know, as long as everybody was made aware of that before they walked in, I don't see the problem, you know. But we're a long way away from that. So now you're just left up to, like I said, either self-policing or, you know, being willing to go out and tell the people from the theater, hey, there's some jerk in here that is totally distracting me. I know me and a couple friends of mine have actually gotten up and told somebody, hey, you know what? I don't care if you're going to text, but could you at least, like, not be shining the damn thing in our faces because it's driving us crazy, you know? And most people, when you tell them, to my experience, have been rather okay. I'm sure that, you know, that's been my luck. I'm sure there'll probably be some ignorant person that'd be like, I'll do what I want, you know? Shut up.
I do what I want. I paid to come.
All right.
I do like some of the comments on this post. JJ Shefton says, I think there should be a theater that allows texting. I wouldn't go there, but the people who text will, and then it would thin out the herd of idiots who would put up with them.
Yeah.
Someone replies that Joe Nostalgia says, hey, Paul, want to go see Avatar 2? Sure. Can we go to the 4:30 showing? But, Paul, that time is reserved for people who text when you watch films.
Dot, dot, dot.
Never speak to me again and stay far away from my daughter, you bastard.
Yeah, I just like the idea of being able to get them all in a room where you could just, like, light them all on fire. You know?
Wow.
Your That's seat just will me. Self-destruct in five
Is
minutes.
Is that a movie?
Just me. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, the teens should forget about texting in theaters. Adults need to make decisions for them because more often than not, they either don't care that they're annoying other patrons or they're too stupid to realize that it annoys the hell out of everybody else. The moment a theater decides to allow texting to keep the tweens happy is the moment they lose me as a customer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I by the comments it on Slash Film here, it's basically saying is, really? Are you sure about that?
The best thing I've ever heard.
Because, I mean, they have people who are commenting. It's like, well, I'm only this age, and I haven't wanted to ever text in a theater. That was just stupid, you know? And basically saying, yeah, who did you survey? Anyways.
Right.
People that were at Twilight during...
I will tell you this. The Alamo Drafthouse, my favorite movie theater in all the world, will never, ever allow that. Says Homestar Runner and Ann Richards.
Oh, it's like Ann Coulter? What?
Hmm. No, Richards.
I got you. Just kidding.
Hey, you don't want Ann Richards to kick you out of a theater, I'm telling you. Anyways, moving on. Off to some more What the Puffuck Nudes. Michael Bay and TMNT. So have we talked about this at all, Ray?
I don't think so.
About this,
we may have just hinted to TMNT before.
Right, I think we may have talked about the fact that there's a reboot or remake or whatever brewing, but I don't think we've gotten into very much details. So I guess Mr. Everyone's favorite director Michael Bay was talking at some 2012 Nickelodeon thing. I don't know what it was about, but he made a comment about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, about them being basically aliens from another planet.
Okay, so here's the thing is, are they still going to be teenage?
You know what? Well, we'll get a little bit into that now. But so he makes a statement, right? So, of course, you know, the internet explodes with, you know, how dare he, you know, first he puts flames on Optimus Prime. Now he's making my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles aliens. So everyone's all freaking out. So then Mr. Bay responds to everybody and says, you know what? You guys need to chill out, which is kind of funny. He says fans need to take a breath and chill. They have not read the script. Our team is working closely with one of the original creators of Ninja Turtles to help expand and give a more complex backstory. Relax. We are including everything that made you become fans in the first place. We are just building a richer world. So he's just like, you know.
So here's the problem. Shut up. I still have a problem. Yes. Okay, so it may still be a cool story, okay? You know, if you don't think about, like, the past of Ninja Turtles at all, I still have a problem. From an alien race, which means that they're not turtles, which also means they're not mutated turtles because, well, they're an alien race. Then the only things that they could possibly be are teenage and ninja. So, and maybe not even ninja, they just have martial arts move because ninja is a thing from Earth. So since they're aliens, they probably just learn martial arts there. So the only thing they could possibly be would be teenage. And why would there be teenage aliens flying to Earth? So thus, I don't think they're actually teenage. It's probably in the 20s at the earliest when you're talking about that. So they're not even teenage. So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles does not reflect on what these type of beings are.
Probably not. You're probably correct. Your logic is not flawed, in my opinion.
Right. So then it gets all crazy up in the hizzy here. So yeah, Michael Bay fights back, and then lo and behold, one of the series co-creators, Peter Laird, he says basically that he's completely on board. Basically, his quote goes, "It's possible that with enough truly creative brain power applied to this idea, it might actually work. I'm not saying it's probable or even somewhat likely, but it is possible. However, I've pondered this further, and I've realized that in one way, it is truly a genius notion." Basically, what he's saying is that they've always tried to figure out a way, I guess, to be able to bring in another turtle into the story. And now he's like, well, now, you know, I don't have to worry about, they don't have to try to figure out a way to do that. There's like, there could be a whole planet of them. But he's really, you know, what he says about it, it doesn't matter if he liked it or didn't like it, because I guess supposedly he sold off his rights to this franchise a long time ago, so he can't do anything one way or the other. I guess I'm taking a wait-and-see attitude. I'm not that huge of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan to be all upset about it. It's not like the original movies were that great to begin with.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You're talking about the turtles, the animation from your childhood. There was aliens in there, sure, but there weren't the turtles.
No, see, the turtles for me were always the original comics, you know.
But I mean,
the cartoons for me were a bastardization of the comics. It was like, oh my god, they took the turtles and made them into Mickey Mouse. And
still, you had turtles in a sewer that ended up mutating from some goo, right?
Yeah,
right.
Right. But so what's wrong with that origin story?
There's nothing wrong with it. Exactly. There's really nothing wrong with them being aliens either, if you want to go that way.
But then they're not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm sorry.
Sure, they could figure a way to make it work.
There was a tweet shown on here. Okay, so with your idea, if it's TMNT, shouldn't it be TANT? Teenage Taint. Alien Ninja Turtles?
Oh, it's like Taint?
Taint.
Pant.
Taint nothing but a Taint. Thing.
So still, I don't understand.
It's great.
Don't get it.
Something else for the fanboys to do.
Mm-hmm. They got to fight about something, right?
Exactly. Somebody ask Kevin Smith, what would you think?
Don't get me wrong, I'm still probably going to want to watch the movie, unless it looks like really, really awful by the trailers. But yeah, it's still going to be on my list to see. But
just it's Michael Bay. I'm sure it'll look really cool.
It will look awesome. Right. It'll be amazing. I'll be sitting there watching. It'll be fantastic.
There'll be turtles exploding everywhere.
Yeah, and then I'll come out of that movie and say, that was a terrible movie, but at least I had a little bit of fun. Mm. Anyways.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yep.
The Alien trailer came out for the new one. Oh, wait a minute. No, Prometheus. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the other day it was just like one trailer right after the other. I was like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. So I don't know if you guys have got a chance to watch any of these.
It's an all-new Alien movie.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple interesting things that I've noticed with these. Okay, so the one that I linked to is from AMC Theater's YouTube channel. And the interesting thing about that is not so much, I mean, the trailer's cool and all, and the trailer makes me really want to see the movie. But I'm really interested in the summary that they have below. I give away a little bit of stuff here that I've not really heard anybody else talk about. And so it says, in the distant future, two superpowers control Earth and fight each other for all the solar system's natural resources. When one side dispatches a team to a distant planet to terraform it for human colonization, the team discovers an indigenous race of biomechanical mechanoid killers. Yeah, I can talk. So that's rather specific. I think that's the first real specific thing we've heard. Don't know how accurate it is or where they got that from. But
it's kind of neat.
Yeah, kind of interesting. And the other reason why I posted both of these is because the tone of each one of these trailers is completely different. Like,
well, they usually are.
I'm just saying, like, the American one was really playing up sort of like the horror aspect of it, and the international trailer for more than half of it is really sort of low key and like all about, hey, we're going off to solve this mystery about these runes and pictograms that we found all over the planet. And it's all nice, touchy feely until a little bit over halfway, and then it goes into the horror stuff. But I just thought it was interesting that they were like totally sort of started completely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't. It just makes me more excited for June. But want to see. Still want to see.
And I'm sure it's on the list. If it's not,
it should. Oh, it is.
Oh, he's like, oh, it is.
Oh, it is. Sure.
Oh, it's not.
Should be.
Put it wherever it is. Mm-hmm. It's not on there.
Oh, it will be. Oh, it will.
It will be in like 2 to 3 seconds.
You will be.
To make another Seuss reference, oh, the Prometheus, we will go. But I'm bouncing.
Let's move into the past, then.
You're telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Talk about the past, Jurassic Park. It's 89% fresh, 81% audience, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum. Sam Neill's part.
Let's not forget Richard Attenborough.
Oh, really?
Right.
Oh, first acting role in 15 years. Nice. Yeah. I didn't know that. I just, you know, copy and paste from the IMDb page, and those were the first three names there, so... That's all I do. William Hurt was offered the role of Dr. Grant, but he turned it down without reading the book or the script. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford also turned down the role.
Well, that's kind of good, I think. I think he would have been seen too Indiana Jonesy.
Yeah, I think Sam Neill really fit the part rather well. I did not read the book, so I don't have any sort of preconceived notions of what his character is supposed to be. I will say, you know, it's been a while since I watched this, but I got this from Netflix on Blu-ray because I figured, hey, why not, right? This movie, I remember going to see it in the theater specifically because it was the first movie ever released in DTS, and me being the home theater or theater geek that I am was just like waiting for something new, and I specifically made sure when I put together my first home theater system that I was able to play back DTS stuff, and I just remember it being really loud, like the dinosaurs, the T-Rex, when the T-Rex is going to town, it's like ear splitting theater. oh my god. Yeah,
the sound was for this movie. I just remembered that it was that theater shaking. I mean, this is one of the most immersive experiences I've ever had in a movie. Was seeing this in the theaters, and obviously on my 22-inch computer monitor and decent creative speakers, didn't get this quite the same sound effects, but it's still the sound from the movie, both music and sound effects and everything. I still give me kind of this flashback to when I was in the theaters, like when the T-Rex roars, I'm just sitting there and just remembering being in the theater and everything shaking, this loud roar coming from it. So this is one of those movies which is very much a nostalgic movie and never seems, and I don't know about you, it doesn't seem old at all.
How about you? No, it holds up remarkably well. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than a few little, you know, technological things that we've moved on from, you know, the mention of VR displays, and they talk about, you know, she's totally impressed that the car has a CD-ROM in it. Like, ooh, CD-ROM. I was like, wow, really? Okay. But yeah, this movie holds up remarkably well. Even, you know, let's see, 1993, the CG in it still looks really well. I mean, look at some of the movies that came out well after this that will hold up as well as this one did. The interesting thing about this whole movie is, like, well, it's well renowned for sort of like ushering in the sort of new era of digital effects, you know, and using CGI in movies. But it wasn't always going to be that. They were originally going to do everything old school with stop motion animation. And there are actually on the Blu-ray, there's a documentary that talks about them. They actually worked on the, you know, doing all this stop motion animation for a good year. Before one of the guys at ILM was like, hey, let me show you this that we've been working on, and showed Steven Spielberg a scene of the herd of, I can never pronounce this right, is it Gallimimus?
Or something.
Yeah. Going across and getting attacked by a T-Rex, and he was just like blown away, like, oh my God, like, this is going to be, this is the way we have to do this. Like, there's no other way. So, you know, he had to call up like Phil Tippett and his workshop and be like, I love you guys, but, you know, I know you guys have been working hard for a year and building all these maquettes and models and all that stuff, but we're going to actually start doing CGI instead, which originally, you know, was like, oh my God, it's, you know, the guy said it was like the worst day ever. And in fact, the line about the paleontologist being extinct sort of came from that little scenario where that somebody had made a comment to Phil Tippett that, like, well, nobody's ever going to use these little stop motion puppets anymore. You know, you guys are kind of extinct. But they actually ended up using them. You see the CG animation, but it was actually animated by Phil Tippett's guys using a custom created motion capture device that they hooked up to the maquette. So they were actually animating the CG by hand, just like they would do the stop motion. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why motions and everything that's in this is just so superbly done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was sort of this really weird hybrid of the two technologies.
The raptor scene, think of the herd, you think of, you know, there's certain things it's like, oh my gosh, how did they do that? And it doesn't look choppy.
Right. No, it looks really good. You know? So yeah, it holds up extremely well.
Not Laura Dern's hairstyle.
Well, that's another one of the things. I don't know when this documentary was made, but everyone's older, obviously. I mean, the kids are older, talking in it and stuff, and it's just like, whoa, Jeff Goldblum's all old and gray, and you know, the actors didn't hold up as well as the movie has. You know?
Jeff Goldblum looks like Rachel's dad.
Yeah. So, the other thing I loved about this film, and it does it to me every time, I've yet to watch it and not get the same feeling, but I love John Williams' score in this. Like, this is like I almost enjoy this more than the original Star Wars score. But like the scene when when they're flying to the island on the helicopter, just when that's that sort of, you know, sort of famous passage from, you know, the score starts up, the, you know, dun 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 dun, that whole thing, when that scene hits and that you see the island for the first time and they're flying around, I get goosebumps every time. And I don't know if it's from the combination of this, what I'm looking at in the music, or it's just the music, I don't know, but it gets me every time. So it's like, to me, it's this movie was like the perfect storm of awesomeness. Like, I loved the music, I loved the effects, the, you know, there are obviously plot holes in it here and there, but I just don't care. I have such a good time watching the movie. I just don't care about any of it. Like, it just, it's really well paced. It never gets boring. You know, so it's one of those that not only is it considered a classic, but to me, it's like one of Spielberg's sort of perfect action films.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that it looks good. I like the story in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's not, I mean, it's not plotless. I mean, it's not a, there's not that there aren't holes in it, but I do like the story. I like how they're coming to be there. I like how they go into the, you know, into the hatchery and they mm-hmm. show all that stuff. You know, the only, probably the only poor animation done in that whole thing were actually the babies. Well, they kind of look like, you know, the V baby.
The bad puppets.
Yeah, the bad puppets. You know, but, you know, the effort is there and the understanding of how it came about. Mm-hmm. You know, from the amber and all that stuff and the mosquitoes. And I always found that really interesting. And, you know, and I find all of that stuff there. And then, you know, and then of course the amazing T-Rex scenes that, mm-hmm. you know, there's total tension there, you know, yeah. And then of course the raptor. Oh my God.
Well, I mean, the always thing
when you
I always
see
think
that
about,
the first time, it's like, oh.
Well, you know, the thing that I always think about this is, like, before this movie, I don't even ever think I knew what a velociraptor was. Like, I don't even think I'd ever heard of a velociraptor. I was a little older then, because I know, like, my nephews and stuff were all into dinosaurs. I don't remember if it was because of this movie or before this movie, if they were into them, but I was never, like, a dinosaur guy, like, not really into dinosaurs. But yeah, I don't remember velociraptors ever being a big deal until this movie came along. Although they did take some creative license.
They took a lot of liberty
with the velociraptors. Cause up until then, their knowledge of actual velociraptors, I think they're about as big of a, big as a turkey.
Yeah. Chicken. Yeah. Chicken or turkey. And they have feathers.
So, yeah.
In the real life.
Yeah, so a little bit of a creative license there, but yeah, what do I know? I don't know nothing about dinosaurs, so I was like, these things are fucking cool and mean. Like, mm-hmm. we need a whole movie with velociraptors. I would have loved to see seen the sequel have the velociraptors hit the instead of
the T-Rex.
Yeah.
So, how old were you guys back in 1993 when this movie came out?
Five.
1993? Or is that how you felt when you were watching the movie?
No, 93, I was 22.
Yeah, I was still 18, going to be 19 in that December.
So I was 13.
Yeah.
But it really is one of those things where you feel like a kid because, it, you know, when you're a kid, they talk about dinosaurs and you get all excited about the T-Rex and everything. And then you finally get to see them on screens. And I don't know about you. When I was 13, I must have regressed to be five.
Mm-hmm.
Five while I was watching that movie. And it was just this kind of giggly thrill to watch, like, wow, real dinosaurs. I mean, I wanted to go and listen to that Triceratops' heartbeat as it was breathing and lifting me up while laying on it or something like that. That was just so cool. I really wanted to, you know, this is a brilliant idea if they didn't make carnivorous ones.
Right.
You know, if they had some control, that would probably have been a good idea. I suppose partly the reason for having carnivorous dinosaurs at the time would be for population control, but they already were trying to put population control in place by making them all female, which didn't quite work, but that's another matter altogether. So I don't quite understand why they made the T-Rex and the Velociraptor, especially considering the cage they ended up putting the raptors in.
Yeah, see, to me, the T-Rex makes more sense than the Velociraptors. I always, you know, figured, because everybody knows what a T-Rex is, and if you're going to a island that has real dinosaurs, you're going to be like, here's the dinosaurs I want to see. I know the Stegosaurus, I know the Brachiosaurus, I know, you know what, there's certain dinosaurs that everybody knows, and those are the ones you expect to see when you go. So I think that would probably be... And as long as you don't make a herd of Tyrannosaurus Rex, you're okay. but yeah, I could sort of see why they wouldn't make it. The interesting thing about it is that the first scene that they shot in the movie with the dinosaurs, like real dinosaurs, it was the Triceratops. That was the first scene that the actors actually got to see a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them say that like the reactions you're seeing on their faces was actually like the reactions of them seeing it for the first time, like, because they said it was so well animated by the people that were doing the stuff inside it, and they're like, this thing was like alive, you know, on set. So we were like actually just in awe of this thing, like, oh my god, this thing could be real. So like, they're like, yeah, we'd love to say that we're great actors and we made it work, but he's like, we owe a lot to the fact that the puppeteers and animators who worked on that did such an awesome job that it made us really be able to believe that this thing was real. You know, so I don't know how much of that is just Hollywood horn blowing, but, you know, I think I probably would have been in the same thing, like, oh my god, this is the coolest thing ever. I want one. Like, can I
take it home?
Right. Right.
I did notice here in the trivia was followed by two sequels. There were plans for a fourth, but they were immediately scrapped in late 2008 after the death of Michael Crichton. Then how come they're working on the Jurassic Park 4 now? It's actually in IMDb 2.
You never know. Michael Bay might get his hands on it.
I think they already had like a director or something.
Right? Dinosaurs are from Mars.
There you go.
And they all have flames on them.
Where did they go? They evolved and went to a different planet.
The Dinobots.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Joe Johnston is what's listed as the director. Of course, this is still in production, so that could change.
Right.
He was the one. Apparently, he was the one who did Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, which I don't hate. I don't hate that movie, honestly.
I gotta watch it again.
Yeah. So.
But we'll see what happens with that. Anything else?
Well, I don't think that's it.
Good.
All right, so here's what we've learned from Jurassic Park. We learned a lot, so pay attention, folks. We've learned fat guys eating are almost always the villain. Autoerotica is greater than or less than animatronic. What?
Does not equal.
Does not equal. Okay. Life will not be contained. Life finds a way. Don't be so preoccupied with could that you don't worry about whether you should. Discovery is a vile, penetrative act that scars what it explores. Sounds dirty. Keep your windows up, don't move, and stay in the damn car.
Yeah.
Animals are never out in the zoo when you want them to see them. Anything all can and does happen. If it's heavy, it's expensive. Creation is an act of force, and control is an illusion. And that is what we've learned from Jurassic Park. I've always considered this movie a classic in my book. It's an introduction to a new age of digital effects and was absolutely brilliantly done. If you haven't seen this before, what is wrong with you? Buy it for your DVD or digital library now.
Yeah, I have it on DVD, and like I said, I got it from Blu-ray from Netflix, so I think I'm probably going to go out and replace my DVD with the Blu-ray soon. It's a
nice Blu-ray trilogy set that you can get from Amazon, and includes a digital copy too.
Yeah. So it still holds up. The score still gives me goosebumps. If you've not seen this, you should. No, it's not Shakespeare, but it is what I consider the perfect Spielberg action movie. It's basically wonder punctuated with moments of absolute terror through the whole movie, which is great. I love it.
I would say just overall amazing movie. Just really pushed the boundaries at the time it was made, and it definitely comes off as a classic. It's kind of scary in a don't mess with nature kind of way without being too preachy about that, you know?
And not overly scary either.
Well, I mean, it's scary. When I say scary, I mean more like scary in the, it's a looming message, you know?
Yeah, it's
don't
not like
screw with Mother Nature
or anything.
Yeah, you're not gonna like be crying in the theater or anything like that. But what I mean is like the whole aspect of don't mess with Mother Nature. You know, they died off for a reason. Da 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 da. You know, that kind of thing.
And this is a good kids movie. I think
no,
kids watch this too. In my opinion,
it's a family movie.
Yeah, it depends on the kids.
Yeah, I wouldn't put the kid in the room by himself with it, but.
But they when they see the dinosaurs, they'll be like, wow. Anyways, moving on.
Again, I just found out that my sister lets her daughter watch Walking Dead.
Oh, nice.
And that's another story. Let's move on.
Anyway, moving on.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. 57% rotten, 72% audience. Yeah. Directed by Chris Renauld, Kyle Balda, starring Zac Efron, Taylor Swift, and Danny DeVito as voice talent. And so that one of the cool things was, in some sense, the movie was kind of spoiled for me because there was actually an animated version of this that was out. And, of course, I went to the Alamo Draft House to see this. What did they show right before the movie?
The old version.
The animated version. So, like, the one slur for one thing, all you see is his green-gloved arms, and that's it.
Yeah. I was the only person in the – this has been out for a while, but I was the only person in my theater when I saw it. Yeah. Did anybody see it in 3D?
I did not.
I did.
No. Did you? Now, yeah. did you see the? And this is kind of off topic a little bit, but did you see the trailer for? Not even really a trailer. The teaser for Despicable Me 2.
No.
Oh my god! It's the stupidest trailer, but it was like one of the most sort of well done 3D effects that I've seen in a while that actually made me one of the few times that I've actually felt sort of like, wow, there's something coming out of the screen at me. And it's a stupid thing. And I'll put the link in the notes for you guys to check it out. But that's what sort of started my, my Lorax experience. So I was kind of like, ooh, this is kind of cool. If they do the 3D as well as they did in the stupid trailer, we should be all good. Did they do it as well as they did in the trailer?
No.
Not really. You know, of course it's an animated movie, so the 3D does look okay. It looks good.
Better.
Yeah, I mean, because they're able to really sort of control exactly what's in the foreground and the background really easily. So they're able to have like that uber separation and contrast between the two. But was it used in like the crazy like stuff coming out of the screen effects? No, not really. In fact, I felt they sort of toned it down during the sort of first person scenes down the river. You know, it didn't seem to be too overpowering, but
felt like a first person shooter in those cases.
Mm-hmm.
Doom.
Yeah.
Go back Doctor in time.
Dr. Seuss version of Doom. Interesting.
That would be very interesting.
The places you will go.
So I'm going to jump right into it. Of course, there was a huge amount of controversy with this film. sort of drummed up by a certain side of our political machine in this country. Talking about how this movie is an attempt to indoctrinate children to sort of a liberal environmentalist agenda. Now, you know, that gets a sigh from me, like, really? Because, of course, the book was written in, like, 1971, I think. And there was a pretty strong environmentalist movement back in 71. And I'm not that overly familiar with the book. Maybe you can enlighten us. Is there any significant differences between the animated thing that you saw, Jeff, and the movie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, besides the fact that you never actually see anything of the one sort, besides his arms.
Mm-hmm.
Or any of his, the rest of his family who keeps showing up and everything. And all he does is sit in the house and knit. And apparently his arms must be really long to go and chop down the trees. Mm-hmm. And then he drags them into the house and knits more threads.
Okay.
That it wasn't as many songs.
Yes, it was. And it was a lot more musical than I expected.
It did a lot more with, because really the story for this version of the Lorax is more about Ted.
Right.
That it is. Yeah. It's more, in some sense, it's more of a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it. And it's more of a story about him and what's going on there. And the story that the Wensler talks about the Lorax is more of a moral for Ted.
Mm-hmm.
And why
to consider. Yeah.
Yeah. And why it's like, okay, I'm eventually going to give you this seed, but here's why you need to do what you end up needing to do. And he tells his tragic story about how he... Right, about what happened with him. Each of the different animals, mm-hmm. Were migrated away at different times. Mm-hmm. So it actually felt a little bit like of a longer period of time, and it really kind of rushed through that production portion of the story of the Thanides, mm-hmm. Than anything. So. There was a difference, and it really was two different types of things. One was the story of the Lorax. Mm-hmm. This one was not the story of the Lorax. It was a story about Ted hearing the story of the Lorax and taking a moral from the story. Right. So there was that main differences, and I think that was a good approach.
Well, I saw in the trivia one of the things that they specifically changed for a reason was that they made the Wensler human – in the movie, because they felt
he looked
that
more like French in the previous episode.
Well, they felt that making him a monster or some sort of creature that wasn't human was sort of like a get out of jail free card for the people watching it. Like, oh, we're not really care about what he did because he's bad because he's not one of us. So they changed it so that sort of kept you in that, like, he's a person, he made this mistake, you know. We could all make this mistake if we don't act responsibly and do what we need to do. So they decided, you know, we want to keep people engaged that way and not let them off the hook, per se, of, you know, oh, he's just a bad guy because he's not human. That they changed that. Now, the family, I thought the family was pretty entertaining. They Which weren't family? Too... The family... Well, of course, Betty White's character is awesome.
Ted's, yeah.
Ted's grandmother. But the Wensler's family was pretty entertaining. I liked watching them. But the group of people or things that I was most entertained by was the animals. I love the animals.
Oh, of course. The bear. The bear was funny. The big bear.
Yeah, the big bear. And the mule, Marvin. Just like his expressions, because he's so just kind of like, ugh. Like...
Yeah.
I was like, oh my god, I love him, I want one. The animals I was totally cool with. As far as the overall story, I felt it a little heavy-handed. You know, there were definitely some directed jabs, I would say, at a couple things. Like, I know when they were talking about sort of the buildup of the business of the, you know, selling all the needs, how they put a thing, too big to fail. You know, like, that industry is too big to fail, which is like, ooh, that's a little bit of a jab directly from the whole, you know, banking crisis, you know. So I could see why maybe certain people felt that it was, you know, directed at them, you know, like, hey, you know. But I don't know if kids are really going to catch on to any of that.
Yeah. I didn't get it, so clearly other children won't.
Other children won't.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I think for my, at least from my perspective, it really just felt like, you know, a moralistic. It's immoral. I mean, that's really all it is. So everything gets exaggerated. Like, all of a sudden, this one person experiences what a thneed can do, and now everybody needs a thneed. And I'm like, and I don't. How can you just like whip up a? It just a randomly made cloth, right. And all of a sudden, everybody needs it, and it's weird. I mean, the concept of it being so popular for what it was made absolutely no sense. But which is one of the reasons why that's what it is people was part of the moral. It's like people are destroying these forests for things which we don't really need. And you know, a moral to the story is if you're going to be chopping down trees, well, you need to do something after you chop them down. You can't just leave it be. Otherwise, these bad things can end up happening. You end up getting everybody put away into a city where everything's just plastic and there's nothing natural, and they have to get bottled fresh air from somebody who looks like the invention person from The Incredibles.
Yeah, breathe responsibly.
Well, at the beginning of the movie, he looked like King Jong-il.
That's true.
He really did. And then I noticed the expression changed, and I was like, okay, I wonder if they did that intentionally.
Does every really short person have to have that same exact haircut?
I don't know. It works for him, I guess. I don't know.
Because him and the chick from Incredibles, which I can't remember her name.
The hair has to make him bigger, like Jimmy Neutron, like Johnny Mnemonic. Jimmy Neutron.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, it was like, I didn't hate the movie. I was kind of entertained by parts of it, and it is what it is. It was a Dr. Seuss book made into a movie, you know. I'm just glad it didn't have Jim Carrey in it.
Well, and it was animated. Well, then you take a look at the Cat in the Hat with the.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
See, it's the live action ones where things get kind of off.
They go horribly, horribly wrong.
Right.
They get very dicey.
But the computer animated versions work out actually pretty good. So
yeah, Hortons was a good movie. I loved Hortons.
I didn't watch Hortons. I should have watched Hortons. Working here's a who.
That doesn't hurt.
Carrie and Steve Carell. Woohoo! Anyways, we'll check into that later. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right. What we've learned. We have learned from the Lorax. If you put things in plastic bottles, people will buy it. If a guy does a stupid thing once, it's because he's a guy. If he does it twice, it's because of a girl. Bears can be used as defibrillators. Sleep is the body's way of telling other people to go away. Yes, and the tree falls the way it leans, so be careful which way you lean. Very cute film and neat retelling of the Dr. Seuss story. Definitely a kid's movie. Take the kids to the theater, but for yourself, you could probably wait for DVD or streaming.
Yeah, it was a cute film, even if the message was a little bit heavy-handed. It was entertaining. I'm not sure the 3D was really worth it. But it did make things pop off the screen, that's for sure.
I'm generally a fan of all animation, and I'm a fan of Dr. Seuss. However, I was just kind of entertained by the visuals, not so much by the dialogue or the overall story, at least the way that they told it in this. So it looked really good, which is what I have to offer.
So. Let's head into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Lockout, coming out a week from tomorrow, actually.
Running to the theater.
Directed by Scott Frank, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Jeff Daniels, and Matthew Good. A man wrongly convicted of conspiracy to commit espionage against the U.S. is offered his freedom if he can rescue the president's daughter from an outer space prison taken over by violent inmates.
Yeah.
Okay. This has the letter B written all over it. However,
You forgot Guy Pearce on here. How did you forget Guy Pearce?
Dude, I go into IMDb, I copy, I paste. That's all I do.
But okay? he's the main guy.
Don't look at me. Again, I'm taking this all from IMDb. It's not my fault.
Okay, IMDb stars Guy Pearce, Maggie Grace, and Peter Stormare. Where did you get these people from?
Who are those people?
Thing. Hold on.
Maybe it's from last week.
I am correcting it. Lockout, directed by James Mather and Stephen St. Ledger, starring Guy Pearce, Maggie Grace, and Peter Stormare.
Yes.
So, yes, there was a copy and paste issue.
Dope. It's okay. I'm fixing. Why is Guy Pearce not on there?
Apparently, this is one of the writers is Luc Besson.
Yeah. Which just gives us a little bit of hope.
Maybe it's Luc Besson.
Here's the thing is while it to me it feels like it has B written all over it, it still looks like a fun movie. And it has sci-fi ish.
Yeah, well, clearly from watching the trailer, it has a much higher quality than a like straight to sci-fi release.
Right.
So I don't know that I would call it B. I think it's definitely an A movie.
Well, I'm not saying it's going to Siffy. That's like more of a Siffy movie, not a B movie.
Well, yeah. There's just a quality difference, you know, when you watch just a straight to Siffy movie. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely a difference.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is in the theater. Which
how they look.
It's one of the reasons. But,
it's a theatrical release.
I guess my way of saying B or my definition of a B movie, basically, I don't think this is going to be a high par movie. I mean, this is probably along the lines of Jason X for that level.
Don't tell Kane Hodder that.
I'm just saying.
He was very proud of Jason X.
Yes, he was. My big thing with this movie is that I keep getting like this Escape from New York vibe. Like,
true. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a prison riot. Instead of the president being captured, it's the president's daughter. They got to send somebody in there to get the president's daughter out of there. I was halfway waiting for them to inject him in the neck with some sort of explosive device, which I thought I was going to get, but didn't happen. I mean, the main character in Escape from New York's name is Snake. This guy's name is Snow.
The only person can is Snow. And really, does Snow sound like a tough guy name?
No.
No.
Maybe it's like Tony Montana.
Good day. Yeah. But I don't know.
He's like, oh,
we have to. Maybe if it was something like, we need to get Jackson. You know,
like maybe he has seven dwarfs. Maybe he has seven dwarf partners.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I've never seen Escape from New York, so really can't say if it's
Kurt Russell.
I know of Escape from New York, but I've never seen it. To the list.
I know why this movie has such a weird feeling to it.
Mm.
It's a French production company. That totally explains it.
Hence Luc Besson. Yeah.
But I mean, he's not just totally locked into doing stuff for French companies, though. But it
Nobody's
does
French.
Every I know that, but every French like French production that I've seen, like especially science fiction, has a really weird sort of feel to it that sort of makes it, you know, again, really high production value, like looks really good, but something about it just doesn't feel like it's really supposed to be a theatrical movie. The last one that I can remember watching that made me feel the same way was a movie called Immortal, which not visually immortal. Was
no.
Hmm?
Not immortals.
Not immortals.
No, not immortals. No,
immortal. Immortal. Immortal.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got crazy Egyptian gods with, I don't know, it's really weird. It's a weird film. But, yeah, so maybe that's why I'm getting the weird vibe that I'm getting. Still think it's a ripoff of Escape from New York. But that's just from the trailer.
I mean, stories repeat themselves all the time, so they're just taking it in a little bit different scenario. That's all.
Right. Anybody else? Anyone?
I don't really have a whole lot to say about it. I think it kind of it looks interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be anything particularly fresh or new. I just think it's kind of weird how, you know, the vice president's daughter or the president's daughter happens to be on the spaceship.
Right, let's send her to the most
let's
dangerous
send her to the prison.
I have this strange feeling that she's being a psychology doctorate or something like that that she's working on, and one of the things she gets the opportunity to do that she's really excited about is going to try to speak to these psychopaths up on the station and trying to get into their heads and become a real psychologist, psychotherapist slash maybe even a criminologist or something. So she's like, you're the president, I can get this thing. So, and then everything all goes to hell.
Very
even
true.
Though it's supposed to be the most secure place ever. But yeah, I think we're all pretty meh on this movie. As I said, it looks like a fun sci-fi B-ish movie. I'll see it, but not any sort of priority on my list.
Whoa.
I tried to save it. I'm sorry.
The cough button also doubles as a sneeze button.
Curse you, pollen.
I know. I tried. No, I couldn't find it. I was like, crap, where's my button? My mute. I apologize.
Well, that's all right. Anyway, it looks okay. Not as exciting as Steve's sneeze. not sure I'd run out to see it. Maybe a rental or Netflix or a Redbox, possibly.
Might be in a past movie in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looks exciting, but probably saw the best of it in the trailer. I call it Con Air in Space. And kind of comes off as a rental to me. Nothing to prioritize.
Understandable. So that's it. That's the shows. But one thing I want to comment on. An SFW show just did their summer movie draft. If you go to draft.msfwshow.com, you can see what what they put up together. And the first movie for that, The Hunger Games, we're going to be seeing next week in the present. So that's one of those that are in the betting streak. So I thought you'd be interested in that. Also, in the past, we're going to be taking a look at On the Waterfront, the Marlon Brando movie. And wasn't that the one with the I Could Have Been a Contender? That was a terrible Marlon Brando.
That was Raging Bull, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think they got it from On the Waterfront.
Oh, got you.
Yeah, something like that. And in the future, we'll be talking about The Rift. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Let us know what you thought of these movies, what you think about the movies up ahead, what you thought about all the movies that we watched in the past by going to colmovies.com. Leave a comment on the blog or shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Please leave us voicemails. That's just 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies. Essentially pulling everything from Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, please pop on iTunes. Despite the link not working, please leave us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it very much. Anything you write in there, I will read on the show. With that, final thoughts.
If you like the Hunger Games, there's a really awesome shirt on shirt.woot today.
Uh-oh.
Check it out.
By the time people listen to this, that will probably...
I know, but it's still... Well, it could be available later.
Oh, that's true.
Nice. Got nothing. Just say glad to be back.
Mm-hmm. Yay! And
thanks for the flexibility as I work on some goals on the personal side.
Yay, we're glad you're back.
Sorry I came back all snuffy.
That's okay. It's not your fault. It's called weather and pollen.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Exactly.
So I'm having issues like that too. So with that, for me, for Fuzz, for the welcome back, Steven.
Yes.
Take care, everybody.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
They're looking at you, kid.
Line.